Welcome aboard. I'm Brad.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott. Welcome to My Ship Story Podcast.
This is a podcast where we invite crew members, both past and present, to tell their stories about life at sea.
So come up to the pool bar and grab a drink.
Sit back, relax, because it's time for
My Ship Story. Yeah, that was terrible.
Let me get a little wet my whistle a little bit.
Take a shot of Aquavit there.
Yeah. Welcome aboard, everyone. It's another episode of My Ship Story Podcast. I'm your host, Brad. Got with me today, Scott and Eric, as usual. What's happening, Scott? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Oh, nothing. I'm just excited that now we're is it safe to say we're back in the saddle? This is the second episode that we recorded in like 6 months. But day after tomorrow of the weekend, I'm going to judge the largest barbecue competition in the world in Kansas City. So I'm pretty much not eating until then. So,
woo, barbecue in Kansas City. That's a big deal.
To give you a scale of how big this barbecue competition is, it's called the American Royal, and it is at the Kansas City Motor Speedway. And last year, I was on table 88 of 95 tables, and each table has 6 judges.
Holy cow.
It's big.
That's a lot of meat.
Yeah. It's kind of dangerous to drive home because you're in a meat coma.
Eric, what about you? Have any big meat events coming up?
Not any meat events.
Hey, careful.
But so last week was kind of rough after we had a recording. So last Thursday, we finally had to.
Are you going to bring us down?
Oh, yes, okay. I am. But then I'll bring it back up. So we did have to put down my 20-year-old dog. Ah. He was just, he made it to 20. He'd had a good life, and it was just. It was just time.
We talked about this last time. The quality of life had deteriorated to the point where he was just suffering.
Yeah, it just wasn't good. He still wanted his food and stuff, but he could, we talked about it. He could barely walk. He could barely see. He could barely hear. It was just not good. And it was just time. And then the same day, so my dad fell again.
Oh, no.
And now, as you guys know, he had broken his top 2 vertebrae in his neck. Now he has a hairline fraction in his L1. He's still hanging in there, but luckily it's only a hairline fracture, but he's in a bit of pain. So we'll get more news on Thursday from the doctor. But this has been I'm just trying to help as much as I can. But it's just this year has been really tough on my dad. It's been not been great by any means. So the house is moving along quickly.
What's our ETA for the house?
I'm hoping by the 31st of October. So hopefully in about a month's time, because we really want to move back in. So yeah, the windows are in, inspections are hopefully happening this week so we can get started on drywall and really get things moving quickly. So that's moving quick.
What about Brad or was it Brad or Eric? Did you guys get your Temu order yet? Didn't one of you guys order some Temu stuff?
Okay, so I did. I ordered a harness for my dog because he likes to run. And so I just kind of like, it's better than choking him on the collar when I need to slow him down. And this is what I was afraid of with Temu, was that it's just like somebody taking your credit card number. And so I ordered something. 3 days later, I'm looking at my account for something and I notice I have these 2 Starbucks charges on my credit card. And I'm like, motherfuckers.
Really?
I'm like, yes. So I'm like, I don't go to Starbucks unless maybe I'm meeting somebody there and like I get like a snack or something, but I don't normally go to Starbucks. I'm not a coffee person.
I mean, you are over 50, so.
I went to log back in.
Do you remember that?
And those charges were gone. They're no longer on my credit card. So I'm thinking, okay, well, either they realized it was a scam or I don't know, maybe I was just seeing something.
Be careful.
Do you think that came from Temu? Was that because of Temu?
Well, it happened right after I ordered that from Temu.
they are notorious for that company is notorious for stealing information and gathering as much information as they can and selling it. So beware.
We've got probably over 25 or 30 things from there, and we haven't had any of that. So I guess we're lucky. But I have
the harness isn't here yet.
We'll
see if it arrives by next week.
All right. Well, let's get to our guest. Let's get to our guest because we've got a special guest on today. As always, all of our guests are special, but this one's special because I worked with this fresh-faced kid, way back on the R ships. Welcome to the show, Roger Ryman. Thanks for being with us, Roger.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Brad. Great to see you again. I mean, it's only been, you know, 25 years. You know, God, we're all looking younger and, you know, and feeling younger. So life is good.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how you got started on ships. But first, remind me, where are you? Where are you from in Texas? I remember
Texas. Houston, Texas.
Oh, Houston. Okay. All right. I thought it was somewhere in West Texas, but I'll tell you later why I thought that. But anyway, so how does a kid from Texas get started working on cruise ships?
Yeah. So, you know, stumbled in there just like everybody else, I guess, one way or the other. I was in grad school, Notre Dame, and I was finished up my master's coursework, decided, you know what? It is not for me. The going on for my PhD was just not in the cards. Publish or perish, no thank you. I think I was watching The Freaking Love Boat. I don't know. I really do. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool? And back then, you couldn't Google it. I think I must have Yahooed how to get hired by a cruise ship. And so I did that. I'm sure like many other people have done, you know, and then, yeah, you pay $20 or $40. Right? I have no idea what I paid back then. And the USBO booklet talks about all the jobs, all the positions, all the human resource departments. So I put together a resume and had a headshot and sent them off, you know, 35 different resumes and applied for a cruise position. And, you know, in a purser department that was up my fill, I, you know, pretty much had a master's degree in statistics. So math was was good. Had a couple of talks, and then somebody calls me up from Renaissance Cruise Lines. Can't remember her name. Joyce is the name that rings a bell, but I can't remember. I get a call, tells me, hey, you know, you're interested in being you work on a Renaissance cruise ship. I said, yeah. And, you know, interviewed me over the phone. No in-person interview. I was, you know, that just wasn't in the cards. It was actually for a night auditor position, which is actually paid more than a reception, but I was green to ships. But I'm like, okay, I'll go with it. You know, an extra $500 a month on top of the measly whatever I was being paid at the time, which is practically nothing, but that's okay.
And let me jump in. It would be rare that you would get hired, that somebody has never worked on a ship would be hired directly into a night auditor position.
It makes absolute, in hindsight, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And none whatsoever.
Because you're there by yourself.
All those questions on your own.
Yeah, you're there by yourself all night.
It's impossible.
When the shit goes down, and no way that they would put somebody green right on the desk.
Don't you remember, like, when I joined Royal Caribbean, we rotated the night shift among the junior assistant pursers or the assistant pursers. And I was on nights my second week on board. Now, I had 1 week under my belt, but I didn't know anything. In 1 week, I was just trying to figure out where all the lounges were and stuff. And my second week on board, I was doing night shift. Luckily, it was only for a week, but.
Yeah, but this is a little different gig because you're doing it all the time.
Yeah,
you're doing it all. And you're doing a little higher up job. You're not just doing the assistant purser. You're doing the night audit stuff. So you're doing a lot. You're doing some accounting as well. Right. So it would be rare. But anyway, Roger, sorry to interrupt you. So.
No, you're good. It was a recipe for disaster. But that was what I was hired to do. Man, I must say this. I was leaving grad school and I called my father up. I was scared shitless. And I was like, Dad, I don't want to be a professor anymore. I'm leaving grad school.
Oh, no.
And I have an offer to work on a cruise ship. They want to fly me to Turkey. I want to do it. And I was so scared to hear the answer. He goes, Roger, you're young, you're single, and you have your whole life in front of you, and you have your education done. Go, do it. When it becomes a job, quit.
Yeah,
and
good
so
for
I'm
Dad.
Like, really? So I can go? He's like, you know, yeah. And I'm like, fuck yes. So, you know, and there we go. You know, 2 weeks later, I was on a plane and headed to Turkey as a night auditor, arrived to the ship, Brad's friendly face. And I find out that I was not destined to be a night auditor. They said, yeah, well, know what? We've decided you better as a receptionist, as I should be, reorganize things. And there we go. And so I get on the ship. And at that time, I made the mistake of telling Brad, I said, oh, man, it's great to be on a boat. He goes, oh, no, boats fit on ships. Ships do not fit on boats. It's a pet peeve. And I will always remember that forever on ever. It was a ship, by God. It was a ship.
It's not a boat. Ships carry boats.
Yep. There you have it.
If the ship goes down, you look for a boat.
Exactly.
I'm glad I made a good impression on you, Roger.
You did. Well, you're also my roommate, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's right. This is back when I was crew purser at this time. And on our ships, the crew purser bunked with one of the assistant or the receptionist. Because we had an odd number. So I went from Royal Caribbean, where I had my own cabin for several years, to sharing a cabin again, but it wasn't that bad.
It was temporary. You made your way up pretty quickly, Brad.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. After Ray Millard, and this is somebody that had an impression on me. Ray Millard got me by the shoulders and shook me, and it's like, Brad, what are you doing? Get out of that crew purser's office.
You worked some crazy freaking hours, Brad. I mean, crazy hours. It was insane. I'm like going, he has no life. I mean, me, I was drinking 24/7.
Nothing's changed.
And he still does the same thing.
Yeah. He still doesn't have a life.
And he still drinks probably just as much.
Both things are true.
Yeah. Life is good.
So anyway, you made it to the ship. So do you have a story about the time that you were on ship?
My name is Roger Ryman, and this is my ship story. I was on the R4. You know, it was a normal night. I was at the crew bar, hanging out, had at least one too many. Not sure what I was drinking that night, but I'm sure it was good. And I was nice and toasty and went to my cabin. You know, started to fall asleep, and all of a sudden I hear, you know, of all things, I've heard lots of drills, right? Code Bravos, code Alpha, code this, right? But I've always, you know, but never heard of code Oscar. Code Oscar, code Oscar, code Oscar. Freaking man overboard. It is 2:00 in the morning.
Wait. And R4, you were in Tahiti, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. We're crossing stories here. So go ahead.
What a nice place to be overboard.
I think I know where you're going. So I'm anxious to hear your version of the story.
Oh boy. So, well, I had behind the scenes knowledge on this one. So here's what happened. You know, a whole bunch of crew were on deck 12, and they're drunker than shit. And one guy just says, you know what? I'm jumping overboard. He jumps. You know, another guy goes, oh my God, you know, I'm going to jump in after him. And another person throws in a bunch of chairs, a bunch of sun cushions and chairs to keep them afloat, you know. And then another wise crew member calls in the man overboard, and then there is a man overboard coming over the speakers. Code Oscar, code Oscar, code Oscar. Holy shit. I knew what the fuck that was. So I got on my clothes and I ran out, you know, I was drunk from the crew bar. I run out to the whatever side it was, and watch the captain just, you know, emergency operations. Of course, they did a Circle William or whatever it's called to get around, and it was crazy. And, you know, and the captain sitting there, you know, railing out orders, you know, yeah, they're low on the rescue boat. Everything's happening. First officer's out there, staff captain, you know, captain's out there in his skivvies. No shit. And, you know, white shirt, you know, white boxers, you know, giving out orders that whatever to do, and you get in the spotlights, and lo and behold, they find, you know, the crew members out there floating and bobbing. And, oh my gosh, it was a sight to be seen. And
no crew members is like lounging in the chair, floating around.
Well, they're just not lounging, they're floating, but come to find out. Here's the behind the scenes thing, right? Yeah, they're Kiwis, New Zealand. They really hated living on cruise ships. They hated it. They wanted to go home so badly. But if they quit, guess what? You had to pay your way home. But if you got thrown off the ship had to pay your way home. So what do they do? They fucking jumped off the ship that day, apparently. This is really from a really good source. Years later, told me that Yeah, Raj, they jumped off the ship because they wanted to get off the ship. They knew if they jumped off the ship and they got kicked off, they wouldn't have to pay their way home. The ship would have to pay their way home. So that's what it was all about. They jumped off the 12th freaking deck of the ship so they wouldn't have to pay, in the middle of the night, drunker than crud, so they wouldn't have to pay their way home.
I'll tell you, being in the ocean in the middle of the night, to me, would be terrifying. Just absolutely terrifying. Like, I can't imagine. You don't know if you're going to get picked up. You don't, especially at night. Like, it's bad enough during the day, but at night, oh, hell no.
Well, they should have known that the chances of finding them were slim. I mean, just read the news. However many people go overboard, rarely are they found.
Yeah.
And heaven forbid you get sucked into the screws. I mean, my God, can you even imagine?
I mean, was it off the back of the ship? I hope it was off the back.
It was off the back of the ship. Okay. I mean, and immediately I heard, could Oscar, could Oscar, could Oscar. And then I felt the ship start to turn. And obviously they're doing a circle. It's called Circle William, right? I learned. Circle William, where you end up exactly back in your path. And then they did the rescue operations, and they found the staff. It was just, it was amazing, you know. But the lengths that some people will go to get off the ship.
Those Kiwis, they're so smart.
Smart? Jeez, I don't know about that.
Oh my God, the next day, the captain was so fucking pissed off. He had an all crew.
Do you remember who the captain was? Do you remember who it was?
It was the big burly, the big guy.
The English guy?
Yes, English.
Kent or Kemp? Captain Kemp?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. We've talked about him.
Miguel is his replacement.
Yeah.
We're in the entertainment area, and he's like, in my 30 years of doing this. He's like, he was yelling at us like it was no tomorrow, and it was brutal. And of course I disembarked them, and the crew, I swear y'all, was still fucked up. They were still drunk from the night before when we had to disembark them and give them passports, and there we go, you know. And they were still drunk the night before, and they were just, you know, stupefied. But yet, from what I learned later on, they were also very happy they were getting kicked off and going home, and not at their own expense. Lesson learned.
But that is still
not the best way.
No, they could have just faked a fight on board and gotten like thrown out or tried to pick up a passenger or something. That's
well,
a much
you know,
easier
introduce,
way of getting
you know,
fired.
Probably half a bottle of tequila, and you never know what's going to happen, right? So at the time, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I think it was about 2:30 in the morning, you know, jumping off the top of the 12th deck was the most appealing option to them.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, get caught sleeping with a passenger. That's a lot more appealing.
That's much more appealing.
I didn't tell you if they were good looking or not. You never know.
there's somebody for everybody. Yeah, there you go. Some people set the bar low.
I mean, seriously, the amount of times that I have been drunk and like blacked out drunk, and the thought of going overboard not once crossed my mind. At all. Like, oh, hell no. No.
Even though the ship like did a circle and came back, I mean, they're probably in the water an hour before the ship came back to them. But I mean, for an hour, I mean, there's probably no ship in sight, barely any lights. You're alone in the dark at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, what's under you? Like, you know, Jaws and Megalodon come to mind. Like, it's like something's going to happen, you know, like. I guess to their benefit, they were lucky. Yeah.
Toad Oscar. I'm like, oh my God, that's a man overboard. I knew Crazy. It was something I had to watch.
Yeah. I honestly, this is a case where I think being drunk might've helped them in the water, only from the extent of them
relaxed,
not really thinking of the danger that they were really in, and just kind of be like, there's bobbing around thinking, okay, well, luckily they're in Tahiti. The water's pretty warm down there, so they just probably figured, you know, they didn't really realize the danger they were in. But oh no, man, that is a nightmare. I think we've talked about this before, that movie called Open Water. Did you guys see that movie? I think it was supposedly based on a real life situation where these people went on a scuba diving trip, and when they counted the people on board, they miscounted, and these are the people they left them out to sea.
Wow.
And they just were left out there on a shore excursion. They were left out there. And I'm thinking, oh man. And then, you know, they never found them. But
do you have any other stories for us, Roger? Or can we ask you some questions?
One story. Yeah, but this is probably a pretty common personal story. You know, I was in Macau. Chief calls me up, my favorite chief. Her name is Sarah. I can say this now, I guess. She's not in ships. She's the government now. Anyway, so she calls me up. She goes, Roger, do you have a backpack? Yes. Empty it out and bring it to my office. See you in a few minutes. I'll be all right there, Chief. So I go there. She goes, what's going on? She goes, I have to go to the bank. I hate the chief officer. I hate him. I just, you know, so she proceeds, no shit, guys. She proceeds to load no less than $200,000 into my backpack. All right, I think it was about 250 to be exact. All right, and she loads $200,000 in my backpack, puts it in there, and she goes, all right, we're going to the bank. Come on, let's go. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, we're going to the bank. I'm like, okay, so here we are. We're walking along. We're in Papeete, which is the main port in Tahiti. I think it's Papeete, that's memory there. And, correct. You know, we're walking, you know, we walk from the ship, we walk there, I go there and boom, boom, you know, and I sit there and count out 200 some odd thousand dollars in cash. And then, they, all right, cool, Chief. And she goes, all right, let's go have a drink. And so we go to the restaurant and have a drink, have some food and yeehaw.
Wait. But before
cost of having a lot of cash at one time.
But you had that money with you when you had lunch or after?
Yeah. Same exact thing.
It was from the ship to the bank. So it was about
Which wasn't too far away. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But still, I'd be nervous carrying that much money with me.
Yeah, I have the same exact experience. And what we were doing is we were exchanging American dollars for Polynesian francs, because we were doing the exchange on board, because it was easier for passengers to spend francs rather than dollars. So we had an exchange on board. So we would take the US dollars that we had exchanged, go to the bank, change them into Polynesian francs and bring it back. And I did the exact same thing. Me and Vicky Jackson, she was the chief, and we went to the bank, exchanged it, came back, had lunch, threw the backpack underneath the table, had lunch. Went back to the ship, and yeah, we had $100,000, $200,000 in there.
Wow,
$100,000, you know, eat lunch and have a drink. It's crazy.
That is insane.
Between you guys, like carrying around $250,000 in a backpack to go back and forth to lunch, and taking everybody's passport and put them in a trash bag on a train on the way to France.
Well, that I did. Like, yes, that I did. I carried like 150 passports in a garbage bag across France, which was pretty crazy too, if you think about it. I could have sold all these passports on the black market.
Yeah. Hey, Roger, how long did you work on ships? It wasn't too long, was it?
About 2 years. I wish I'd done it longer. Yeah, Brad, you're an inspiration not to go longer. I was a crew purser in Tahiti, one country. That life was good. Okay. But then I was invited to take out R6 or R7, I can't remember which one, out of France to go to a South America cruise. I'm starting thinking about all the countries and all the work that must require. I'm going to go to the real estate business. And so I've been in there ever since. There we have it.
Yeah, Tahiti was a good gig because you didn't have to do anything new and you weren't going to any place new. So it was all the same thing. It was pretty cushy. It was a pretty cushy gig. The real bitch was bringing those ships out and bringing a new ship to new ports every day until you finally settled into a routine. And with Renaissance, you really didn't get into a routine all that often, except for Tahiti, because you were constantly changing ports, you know, depending on the seasons. So it was, if you're in the Med, you're going over those, you've been there before. So, you know, the thing, but bringing a new ship out and going to those new ports until you get into routine is a tough gig.
I knew what I was in for after watching you in those few countries, you know, going from Turkey to Greece to, oh my God, you worked some insane hours. I'm sitting there going, no, go to a, you know, all those countries. No, I think it's time to move on.
So. Well, part of that was bringing it to Tahiti. Well, no, that was the R3, but, you know, yeah, going to new ports, but bringing that ship to Tahiti for the first time, that was bad. And Eric knows this because you got to do all of that, those immigration or those vaccination cards and landing cards. And it was, I mean, I was working a lot of hours every day at sea trying to get all that paperwork done for the first time in Tahiti. And after that, it's good. But that first time.
And of course, we all know how overtime pays on cruise ships, right? It's usually paid in drinks. You want a shot of tequila? Okay, I'll work another hour.
Yeah, no. I remember like when we used to work a lot of hours during the holidays, like Christmas, New Year's. Those cruises were always super, super busy. And they would switch up the itineraries to make sure that the holiday did not fall on like a turnaround day. So like if Christmas fell on like, you know, the turnaround day, what Sunday, let's say, there was normally 7-day turnaround, they would change the itinerary around. And every once in a while, they created a really crazy itinerary where we went foreign and then back to the U.S. and then foreign again and then back to the U.S. So you had to 2 full immigrations on like an 8-day voyage, which was insane because you didn't have the systems that they have now. And it was just so much work. And then they treat us to like, oh, we'll promise to give you like overtime hours. And our overtime rate was something like $2 an hour or something. It was something stupid. It was ridiculous. You're like, seriously? You just gave us $20. I was like insane.
How long? How long did you stay? When did you? I'm assuming you left before Renaissance folded.
I did. That last contract would have put me in there, but I left in February of 2021. Was the year that I left.
2001. I was like, dang.
2001.
Yeah,
so that was my last. That was my last hurrah, and
missed it by that much.
I know. If I got one more contract, I may have been off before. You know, I don't know. You know, it was a March departure date, but I knew that could have been a long contract. But you know, Renaissance went under. Not there. You know, went under. You know, just a couple weeks after 9/11. So God, I was around for that. So.
Yeah.
It was the single best time of my life, you know, best memories, the best people. I met so many wonderful people. And I'm just grateful to have been on ships, you know, from the people that are sitting in front of me, you know, Brad, you know, the first person that taught me what from boats and ships. So there's a very distinct difference there. And I get it. And now I correct other people when they say the same thing. To you know, whatever it might be, but it was just an amazing period of my life, and I was grateful.
Was your whole time over there? Was it in that area, like Turkey and did you ever get to the Caribbean or?
Oh no, never made the Caribbean. You know, yeah. it was all in Europe for the most part, and South Seas. It was you know, Turkey, and Greece. And Portugal and Spain and Gibraltar, Morocco, this is a whole other itinerary.
That sounds awesome.
And then Tahiti, you know, for it was in those areas.
Well,
yeah, so, Renaissance by far large was not.
So you're a there Caribbean in like where everybody wants to go. That's like the bucket list for everybody to go on a cruise and vacation stuff. So where would you say your favorite island and worst island over? If that's even possible to have
no brainer, hands down, big surprise, Santorini. Santorini was my favorite place to go. Beautiful. The pictures don't do justice. It was just awesome. Santorini, Greece. Yeah, where was my least favorite place to go? Kusadasi, Turkey. Yeah, that was my least favorite place to go. Greatest place to shop.
Yeah.
But as for a port to get off at and go and have fun, I'll pass, you know, other than cheap cigarettes and whatever, I'll pass.
Oh, I love Kusadasi. I would go.
There we go.
I would go have lunch. I would go get a haircut there. Best place to get a haircut, man. Those guys were so good. Just loved it there. Of course, so I went to Ephesus a couple of times.
If we're talking about Ephesus, hands down, Kushadasi rules. Okay, if we're talking about Ephesus,
well, that's not Kushadasi, proper. You had to go a ways out to get to it, but yeah, that was the port for it. But that was right. That was a really good. If you go to Kushadasi, skip Kushadasi unless you need a haircut. Go to Ephesus for sure.
Well, in that case, Kushadasi ruled. Ephesus was amazing, right? So maybe I didn't answer that question quite correctly. I'm trying to think of other places I went to. Rhodes was not all that for sure. Rhodes, Greece. It was, you can see butterflies if you drove somewhere. But other than that, it wasn't all that.
My only trip to Kushadasi was I had dinner there. I only stopped one on a repositioning, stopped there once. So I couldn't get off the ship during the day. So we just went to dinner out. And it was weird because it was the first place I had been to where like the police have like machine guns and they have like high powered rifles on them. And we were just kind of like, what the hell? And then there was like a big fight broke out between some crew and some other people there. It was just like, I think it's time to go back to the ship now. But my only experience there.
But do you remember the port agents in Kushadasi? They were the best. They were so good. I still remember the guy's name, Mert. He was awesome there. And I kind of fell in love with this, one of the port agent assistant girls. Her name was Ichi or something like that. She was beautiful. One half an arm.
You don't remember about, that whole run was the fact that we had a lot of cigarettes. You know why? Because we had to give them to the port agents. You know, when they came in to embark the ship, we had to give them 2 cartons of cigarettes each, right? The great thing about that, if you were a smoker, and I was that cigarettes were free, you know? And,
that's why I'm still smoking.
Life is good. If you still ask the old Turkish Marlboro Lights, he'd be like, oh, those old lights, those are mediums at best, you know? Shit. Those are good stuff.
Hey, I'm going to ask one of Scott's questions here. Did you ever hook up with any passengers?
Never.
Really? Did you ever come close?
Really? Really?
Did you think about it? Did you have the opportunity? And
God, Brad, I would love to tell you that I had all those opportunities and all those things, but I never did. I
could have been a free ticket home.
Never, ever freaking happened. And I would love to tell that story. I would, but it never did.
Brad, right. Part two.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
In your dating life on ships, where would you think the craziest place that you did it on a ship?
Craziest? Yeah, I don't have crazy. I just have fucking normal. You know, I was unlucky on ships for the most part. Yeah, first couple of contracts, it was a unlucky run, and then the last contract was on the R4, and I did meet somebody there, and I don't have much to say about that other than deed was done,
Well, you had a couple of
good times.
You had a couple of stripes on your shoulders by then. That helps a lot.
I did have a couple of stripes and walking around the radio and all, and with radio in one hand and drinking the other. I guess you call that the good life.
Do you ever miss working on ships, or are you satisfied with the time that you had? Do you think you got out at the right time and you're like, hey, that was those couple of years was just right?
So I've given that question a lot of thought lately, and the answer is yes. I loved and cherished every moment I had on ships, and so glad I did it. And I wish I might have done one more contract just to make sure that the job was done. I definitely had experience. Now, later in life, I find myself, us cruise shippers, I don't know how else to fucking put it, but we're unique. We're looking for this, like, this life experience is different from others, right? And so I don't know what that is in the U.S., but I do think there is a golden years comparison. That might be the RV life, where you just travel around with this other community and move from place to place to place, this other nomadic lifestyle that could be quite cool. That's not ship. It's not confined, but yet it is unique and yet cool. You know, I don't know. I know a
couple of people that have done that, like BB
and her husband,
Ludi. And didn't Rick Chatterton do that recently? He got on on one as well and went around the U.S. and Canada on an RV.
Yeah, I think you might have something there. Do you go ahead?
No, I was going to say we need to find a page that says, you know, cruise your return RVers in the U.S. So that way we have a community within the community going, you know, I used to be a cruise shipper, but now I RV. And it's cool.
I think think that would be funny as a filmmaker. I think that would be funny to write a movie on, you know, different shippies that meet up with each other, you know, later on, like, you know, later on in life and stuff, and try to go back and live the shippy days, but on land and travel and kind of stuff like that. Kind of like an Odd Couple type of comedy thing. Cause, you know, now like some of the movies that I watch now are, Morgan Freeman that's in a retirement village or whatever, and then, you know, they have the funny stuff that go on in there, and I'm like, oh my gosh, those are so funny. I'm so old, I can't believe I've watched all
there you go, Scott. There's an idea for a movie there. Go ahead, make one.
My wheels are like
yeah. Hey, Roger, do you have any like, do you tell people like land people that you worked on ships, or you're reluctant,
or
you kind of come out?
Oh my God, did you really? Yeah, I did. And there is one thing that I have to tell you, but that I learned on ships that has truly benefited me later in life. And that is working on the front desk, talking to people that they're often happy, but we deal with many, many, many pissed off people. You know, when they come on board, their bags aren't there, whatever it might be, they're pissed off, all right? The art, the skill, the whatever of telling somebody what they do not want to hear and making them happier for it is a skill set that truly served me for the rest of my life. You know, being able to tell somebody what they don't want to hear and making them okay with it and walking away going, all right, there we have it. That's that. Yeah, that is what I learned at the front desk more than anything else, is how to tell people.
Yeah, just think of the schooling behind that, going to college for like, you know, 15 years to get that level of letting somebody, you know, talking to people that are mad or upset or solving the problems or whatever. Like, hey, you can do, you know, you can either go to college for 15 years or you can go work on a cruise ship for a year.
And you'll it have was the best skill I ever had. The best still is, you know, to be able, but it really is. It's about communication. That's everything. And that's what we learn on cruise ships, is how to communicate with people. And it is, as we all know, becoming a lost art.
So we're about to wrap it up. Is there anything you want to leave us with, or kind of tell us what you're doing now? What do you do now? You said something about real estate.
Are
you a real estate agent like Eric, just working like 24/7? Just nose to the grindstone.
Like 24/7, doesn't Eric? I'm in the mortgage side. I'm in the side that I guess decides. And things are slow, as we all know. But life is good, and that's what I found. You know, I'm in the mortgage business. What do? I communicate with people. A process. A B C D E. You know, and I'm a purser. Well, hey, I'm in finance. What can I say? You know, so I literally am doing what I did when I was in cruise ships, but in just a little different way. And my communication is everything. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's call it there. Thank you so much, Roger, for coming on. Oh, hey, I have to tell you how you influence me and why I remember you so well is, of course, we kind of connected. Somehow you found out that I was kind of a Red Dirt country fan. You were like, hey, have you ever heard of Robert Earl Keen? Oh. I'm like, no, never heard of Robert Earl Keen. And so you introduced me to Robert Earl Keen. And there, I got into all those Texas singer-songwriters and still listen to them today. And Gringo Honeymoon, never get tired of it.
Oh my God! Yes,
yeah,
Matt Green,
yeah.
Jack Ingram, Robert Keane, Reckless Kelly. Oh my God!
Yeah,
never heard of any
I even I may have been listening a little bit to the guy that was married to, shoot, one of my favorite,
Charlie Roberson just passed away, married to one of the Dixie Chicks, are you?
No, but I didn't really listen to him too much. I radio a little bit, but the guy that was married to Julie Roberts, god damn it.
Lyle Lovett, baby.
May have gotten into Lyle Lovett because
Robert O'Keefe's roommate at Texas A&M.
Yeah, that's why I can't remember if I was into Lyle Lovett before, and that's kind of why we started talking about Robert Earl Keen, or if I got into Robert Earl Keen because of you and then went on to Lyle Lovett, which I'm probably even a bigger fan of Lyle Lovett than Robert Earl Keen, but still both. But that's what I remember most about you, is we used to talk about music, and from then I just spun off into all those Texas singer-songwriters. Yeah, that's great. So always fond memories of you, Roger. Always fond memories.
Well, shit, Brad. Right back to you. Great to be on the boat. Well, it's not a boat. It's a ship.
That sounds right. Like Brad.
All right. Yes, well, sir. Let's wrap it up there, guys. Thank you so much, Roger, for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Hey, and I want to remind everybody, hey, if I'm reaching out to you, please come on the show. Please at least respond no if you don't want to come on the show, but at least respond to me, okay? I'm reaching out. I want to hear your story.
Yeah, you can block him afterwards, but just tell him no first.
Cheers, to meet you, Roger.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, oh yeah, cool. just like fun. I remembered him. Just like I remembered him.
I didn't know you had roommates on Renaissance, especially not as a crew purser.
Right, as a crew purser, yeah. I had roommates, yeah. It was the regular old cabin. We were in the same corridor with, you know, the staff. So everybody was sharing
the ships where the porthole opens up.
No porthole. We were inside.
Ooh.
Yep, inside cabin.
It actually, in my drinking days, inside cabin was not a bad thing. I actually enjoyed that it was pitch black in there, and oh my I could God, sleep.
It is so wild. Well. Like, you just turn off the lights, and as soon as you shut that door, it is like, yeah. I mean, you can't see nothing.
No.
Like,
I love that.
Which was great, because if you were out, you know, late or whatever, you needed to go to sleep, and I mean, it literally took, and it takes me forever to go to sleep now, but you could pass out and like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, and it was pretty far aft too, so that was another good thing, because that was my alarm clock a lot of time. You know, you hear those thrusters going, going into port, and you're like, shit, I gotta get up and clear the port. I gotta get up and clear the ship.
Hey everyone, the ship is about to set sail, which brings us to an end for today. We hope that you enjoy the podcast. For bonus audio, and if you would like to see this podcast in video, please visit our YouTube channel, My Ship Story. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as My Ship Story. Don't forget to let us know if you're a past or present crew member, and if you have a story that you would like to tell, or if you'd like, you can email us your story for us to read on the air. Email us at myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. That's myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. Goodbye for now, and be sure to tune in next week, same time, as we'll have a new podcast every Monday. Bon voyage!